You're listening to Around Comics, episode 186. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. I'm Christopher Niesman, and let me introduce you to this week's panel. First of all, he is the pride and joy of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and the host of Tom vs. the JLA. He is, of course, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello. Hello. That's all I got. Let's go.
That's it?
Yeah. Battery's running. Let's not stick around,
Chris,
all right?
Chris forgot his power cord, right,
yeah,
so it's going to be a lean and mean
here.
Episode. All right, next is a fellow Chicagoan and writer of the upcoming series Cisco Kid versus Wyatt Earp from Moonstone Publishing, Mr. Len Cody.
Hey, everybody. How are you?
All right. We haven't talked to you since, like, episode 50.
Yeah, it's been a long... I think I put on a little weight, too. But
you look good.
Oh, thank you.
Fight in shape, man.
Yeah. Ready to tackle a Western for the summer and webcomic, too. So, yeah.
There you go. We will definitely talk about that later in the show. And next is a longtime background singer for Around Comics, filling in for Sal this week, is Hank. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm invading the internet.
15-year-old Hank. 15-year-old Hank.
I know. We're going to have to be on our
really
best behavior.
Hank's been 15 for 3 years.
He has legal guardians here in the shop overseeing things. So, yeah, you're sitting you're sitting in the big guy's chair.
Yeah, it's like the extra that gets to, like, be in the background of, like, a good shot for, like, one time.
No,
it's like
never
when you were a
shots.
Kid and you had those G.I. Joe ads where you'd fill out your own stats, and they'd send you this. Everyone would get the same toy, but you would get a card with your stats that told you right back what you wrote. Like, I'm a maverick, and the other team members don't trust me, or I'm a leader.
What's G.I. Joe?
Oh, my God, Hank, so young.
Well,
back when war was funny, Hank.
I am... You know, and we'll talk about G.I. Joe probably in the next episode, but I have really fond memories of that.
No one ever died, man.
It was
parachutes for everyone, everywhere.
It's like the Cobra guys with the parachutes again.
Lasers flying over people's shoulders.
And no one ever gets hit. It's beautiful. All wars should be fought like that. Lasers that don't hit anyone.
The more dramatic is the winner is.
Well, I want to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. You never know who you're going to see here. And I also want to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com, where InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering the beautiful Starman Omnibus Hardcover Volume 1. At last, the hit series created by James Robinson and Tony Harris is collected in a series of six spectacular hardcovers.
I'm waiting for all six to be bound together into one giant book.
Is it going to be six?
Yeah, there's six volumes.
That's... Okay, I'm starting to add things up in my head.
Don't buy any more statues. You can't read a statue, Chris. It just sits there.
Well, that's true, but you know how I can afford the Starman Omnibus?
Well, you can get a great deal from InStockTrades.
That's
right. You tricked me into this.
Because right now, that Omnibus
into
is...
into
a spot. And right now, that hardcover Omnibus is on sale for 37% off the cover price, and it is just a minuscule $31.49.
I bought it.
I know, absolutely.
For more than that, actually.
Really?
Bought it here.
Yeah, Mark does kind of gouge you on the prices here. But
I paid $70 for mine.
Come with, like, gold foil binding?
Everything here is more expensive.
Well, it's because of the hands-on service you get here. and I'm gonna, and I'm going to leave it at that.
With a hug and a kiss and said, here, you can have this.
All right, well, guys, let's. I tell you what, let's jump right into our. Yes, it's the lean and mean episode. Gotta get there before the battery dies. Let's jump ahead to what we've been reading the last couple weeks. It is time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the Stack.
That's right. It's Top of the Stack, our chance to let you, the listener, know what we, the panel, have been reading for the last couple weeks. It is tradition on Around Comics to let Mr. Caters go first. So, Mr. Caters, what have you been reading?
There's a lot of good stuff that came out this week. Nothing that completely blew me away, but the one thing I really enjoyed a lot was Action Comics 865, written by Jeff Johns with art by Jesus Moreno. Jesus.
Don't fuck with the Jesus.
Yeah. Sorry, Hank. Earmuffs, Hank. It is a pretty much an issue retconning Toyman, so the character makes sense, but it's also fun at the same time. If you don't know who Toyman is, he is a Superman villain that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because all he does is really make toys, and you would think that Superman wouldn't really have that much of a problem dealing with an old man who makes, like, dangerous little toys. And he doesn't most of the time, but Toyman is extremely creepy. And if you read any of Jeff Johns' older work, like The Flash, he's well known for doing issues just about one villain. During The Flash, he would focus on, you know, he would do an issue about Captain Cold, an issue about Heatwave. And those traditionally lame villains, when a good writer and an artist get a chance to work on them, actually make them very interesting.
By giving them character?
By giving them a reason to exist, which very much he does with Toyman in this issue. We find out that Toyman's a very disturbed man who is sort of fixated on Superman. I mean, it begins with him saying there are two types of people in the world. There's Batman people and Superman people, and he's a Superman guy, but he keeps getting caught by Batman.
You know what I had to think of whenever he said that? It was the pulp,
Beatles,
pulp
fiction.
Yeah, the Beatles and Elvis people.
Hank, do you know who either one of those bands are?
Who?
The Beatles. It's only 10.
He doesn't even know anything. He doesn't even know who Elvis Costello is.
There is a time you don't. Really? No, he doesn't understand. But I totally lost my train of thought. But it's creepy. He makes robots. He makes lifelike robots, which explains all the old Toyman, because every couple of years you'd see a Toyman that doesn't look like the previous one. And I guess if you're a fan of one of them, you might be pissed to find out that they're just a robot now. But get over it. If you're a Toyman fan, you had problems. I mean, if you're hanging your hat on Toyman, I don't know what you've been doing lately. And it has a very nice sort of creepy twist at the end that seems really obvious in hindsight, but makes the character make sense. It's just like he's a very lonely man who loves children, only trusts children, and kind of has to deal with the guilt of the fact that one of the things he created killed a child, and having to deal with that. I mean, he's like this repressed sort of character. And this is by far the most interesting Toyman I've ever read. He's not a great character.
One of the things I liked is just kind of a little, you know, I guess homage to the past was they had the Toyman costume from the Challenge of the Super Friends. Was that in the comics? Did they have that Toyman?
Maybe at some point. There's been like 1,000 different ones.
Yeah.
And the art, Jesus Moreno did a great job because the flashback sequences were drawn in, you know, a very different style, so you could tell it was a more washed out, like, watercolory.
Yeah, it looked aged. It looked like a timepiece.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. And it was a nice, like, sort of one and done. Like, if you are a huge Toyman fan and you've been unhappy with the Toyman you've received so far, then perhaps this Toyman would be the one that you would like.
Even though the flashback stories is like, did this take place in like 1860? I mean, it looked old.
Yeah, it's a guy with a stocking cap and like a candle to the. Toyman is a Renfair fan.
Okay.
I think is the.
I was looking for like horse-drawn carriages.
If the issue was 4 pages longer, you would have seen a Renaissance fair scene. But I guess they probably had to cut that out.
That's a whole other comic. I didn't pick that up until your recommendation on the forum, and because honestly, I was like, oh, okay, it's the issue before Gary Frank comes back, and it really gets into what Johns has been doing, and it was a really fun one-shot story.
Tiny Superman robots tying up Jimmy Olsen like Lilliputians tying up What's his name? Gulliver.
Yes. Yeah. And so which is funny.
Ooh, I broke out some literature on you. Look
and
at that.
I was like, ooh,
I
big
read
boy
big
books.
Books.
Well, it's going to be funny because that's the same thing we're going to be doing to Hank all night because Hank is 15.
You shouldn't talk about tying up 15-year-olds. Is that what you're talking about? Could be. Let's move on.
On that note.
Well, Hank's mom is radar's going off. My son's in trouble.
I must go.
You want to check out my comic book collection?
Well, Hank, what is your top of the stack this week?
My top of the stack is... well, I just got my books today, so I haven't...
You haven't read any of them. What's the highest-selling one, Hank?
I'll just judge by cover. Astonishing X-Men. Mm-hmm.
Good. You remember Astonishing, didn't you?
Read the first, like, six pages.
There were a lot of big sellers that came out this week.
It's going to be tough to choose what's best. I'm going to have to wait to see when the numbers come out.
It was a great week for comics.
So what is your pick, Hank?
My pick is Batman Nine Lives. It's a Elseworlds book from 2001.
That did not come out this week.
Oh, no, it didn't. I read it this week, and that's all that matters.
I didn't even know that came out as a hardcover. I saw you walking, strutting around with that earlier, and I was like, ooh, hardcover, because I've got the paperback of that.
Yeah, like the show.
Hank, were you strutting and holding a hardcover comic book? You should never carry a comic book and strut.
Oh yeah, I was doing it at school and all those things. I got it in New York at the convention for, not that much.
How much is not that much?
$12.
Damn,
it's 25.
Jesus Christ.
It's a deal maker here. He's going with you.
No one can resist me.
He bought it at the airport. Someone couldn't get it in his luggage.
Some guy that needed a piece of pizza at the Sbarro at the LaGuardia. I don't think LaGuardia has a Sbarro. So tell
LaGuardia.
Us about it.
Okay. It's written by...
I say LaGuardia.
Gordia.
Yeah, I don't know what you're saying. It's the nitpick episode.
It's written by Dean Motter and drawn by Michael Lark. And I have never read any Dean Motter stuff before, but I'm a very big fan of Michael Lark. And from what I understand, this is Michael Lark's first book that he's done in his, now we know, like the Michael Lark,
What we know of Michael Lark now, that is the birth of his style, isn't that?
Yes, this is the first time he tried out that, awesome.
Don't worry, you'll learn how to talk like that when you get out of high school.
Can you just write
me
a review?
Yeah, I'm putting your ideas together for you.
I don't know how to explain it. It's, horizontal, so a lot of, the panels are mostly, widescreen, so... it's really great.
Such a frustrating you. I spit out my ideas.
I don't know how to explain it. It's horizontal.
It's good. Book good.
Book good. Bound.
Batman.
Batman fight.
It's...
Take a deep breath, Hank. You're not being great.
It's told in... It's the Batman universe set in, the 30s, and it's very noir, and there's... All the characters have changed into, 1930s characters. Like, the Joker is just, a card shark, and the Riddler is, is an attorney.
How does this fit into continuity? I don't know if I could read
this. He's just hitting his stride, now you're going to give him shit.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
He's listing things.
Dick Grayson is the main character. He's a private eye, and he's... the book opens with the death of Selina Kyle, and so he's investigating the murder, and that's the story of the book. And I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it kind of takes a new look on all the... The
it's
traditional bat
like
characters.
Ricketto.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're still
hung up on the formatting.
I was
sideways.
It's also bound, so the pages aren't loose.
That reminds me of a Superman Metropolis, which came out about that same time. It was Superman reimagined as a science fiction. It's actually based on a silent film by Fritz Lang. You familiar with it?
Oh yeah, Metropolis.
Yeah, Metropolis. I think this is similar to that. Yeah. Go ahead.
No.
That might even be based off a silent film, but it reminds me of the same kind of vibe anyway. If it's not exactly that.
Well, there's the old classic Golden Age heroes are sort of born from that. I mean, Batman's born from that. Environment, really, anyway. I mean, you look back historically.
Now he flies the bat jet. And
he started off punching gangsters on roofs and using guns. So, I mean, some would say that this is more of a return to the actual origin of the character.
Batman's really a supporting character in this. He doesn't show up.
You're right. It really is more of a Dick Grayson book.
Yeah, it's a Dick Grayson story.
And he's what, a PI?
Yeah, he's a PI.
Former cop.
Private Dick.
Yeah, he's Private Dick.
Private Dick.
Yeah, it's a great noir style or a great noir story. If you like Michael Lark's work in Gotham Central or Daredevil, it is... Yeah, it's a really good series. Have you read it?
What, this Batman book? No, actually, I haven't. I get to speak with authority about something I don't know.
Dude, this is right up your alley. It is right up your alley, because I know that you like the period pieces.
Chris knows what you like.
I'm taking it as an educated guess.
I like the horizontal format. It's horizontal, right?
Do they call this? The pages aren't loose at all. The pages are not... They're not loose.
I did
number.
It came loose. I did that.
Self-bound.
This book is stapled, so it reads in order.
All right. Well, definitely check out.
Yeah, Batman, if you're into the crime books like Criminal coming out now, you know, it's a great book.
And Michael Lark draws an awesome Batman.
Oh yeah, he does.
Always has. Well, my top of the stack is a total surprise for me this week. I actually had I was going to do a retro. Top of the stack on
flashback. Top of the stack.
Ooh, I think that sounds like a good new segment. I actually had some, but
oh,
I'm gonna
start it something.
I'm gonna hold that, and I'm gonna talk about that probably the next time we record. But I read Marvel's 1985 by Mark Miller and the incredible Tommy Lee Edwards. And
is that what it says on the?
Yes, the incredible Tommy Lee Edwards.
The incredible Tommy Lee Edwards. Tenacious
time. I almost didn't buy this because the premise sounded kind of silly to me, and I was like, okay, I love Tommy Lee Edwards, and Mark Miller can be hit or miss, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll roll the dice, I'll pick it up, and it is one of the funnest books I've read in a long time. Just to give you the setup on it. It's a little bit of a fourth wall breaker. It is about Marvel villains coming into our world. So it's kind of in a DC perspective, Tom, think of it as Earth Prime.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense for me.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for explaining it to me. I didn't understand the concept.
But it opens
is it bound?
Up no, and it is portrait. It is not landscape. It opens up with a young kid about 10 years old in a comic shop in 1985. Just like many of the listeners out there could remember 1985, me, I was 12 in 1985, so it was definitely very reminiscent. I know that blows your mind, doesn't it, Hank? It's very reminiscent of my time in the comic shop and my initial fascination with these characters. And the story opens up that it's the kid looking through Secret Wars, number 10, and Tommy Lee Edwards does a nice little art change there to show the simplicity of the comic art versus his art, which is supposed to represent the real world. Yeah. I'll let you read it for the plot. You're welcome. What was more important to me is that it really played on my nostalgia for that time.
Your sickness.
Yeah.
Your obsessive compulsiveness.
All of that in every way, and it addresses one of those.
The sadness.
Broken dreams.
You know, that's something about what we do as comic fans is we're constantly trying to recapture the childhood fascination that we have with this medium, that how that manifests a lot now.
That one day, Hank.
You'll try and recapture
it. For Spawn.
How that has a tendency to manifest itself in adults is in our obsessive compulsive nature. And that's, I think, how a lot of people try and recapture that, which is probably not the best way to do it. But this really showed a kid who used comics as a way to get out of his, rather shitty 10-year-old life in his perspective. And it kind of captured that and pulled that whole escapism of comics and made me remember that. So I mean he might as well have been at his house with the kind of like Roy Thomas said, it's like comics should be read under your blankets with a flashlight
with a little bit of shame
with, yeah yeah you know, it's a great father-son story, and it also, you know, has a little morality lesson in there about, you know, how comics, you know, comics are heroic, and people that read comics should take those lessons, and it hits on that a little bit.
Not all the time. You probably shouldn't, like, try and stop a car with your...
Well, the companion piece would be Kick-Ass, where you're definitely not supposed to be.
Yeah, should not be living your life as a superhero.
But this it really hard. Great little vignettes in it, and then it has a nice twist at the end, and as you see real Marvel characters coming into this kid's life, and I have a feeling it's going to be this really happened. It's like, oh, you're crazy, kid. But it was a lot of fun, and Tommy Lee Edwards' art. If you haven't read.
Fantastic.
What was the
bullet points. Yeah,
absolutely.
Get it for the art.
Well, that's an excellent pick for the top of the stack, because I really enjoyed that too. And even though it was a little bit before my time, as far as the era, particular era that they're being nostalgic for, I still felt a little, you know, I mean, I came in at the early 90s, so I made that joke about Spawn.
So did I.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right, there we go. Right as I was getting into comics, you were born.
I came out.
he came out of his mother right when Spawn.
Right. It was multiple Spider-Man covers of Todd McFarlane. But it did remind me of reading Secret War. I had to go back to the back issues to read Secret War because I heard about this awesome event that happened back in the 80s, and it reminded me of the first time I did read it, because I was maybe about the same age as the protagonist when I read it, even though, you know, it was back issues at the time. So it was no matter what era of comics you come from, this book will still speak to you.
Yeah, it's that first comic that said, ooh, this is
it
something that
like
I want to do.
It sounds like a nice departure for Miller to do something like that, as opposed to sort of the Kick-Ass and Fantastic Four, where it's been, I mean, for Miller, I mean, he's a hype machine, which is what you do in comics, and that's nothing against him, but it's kind of cool to see him do something like that. That seems like it's not like a big, like,
it was a subtle approach to comics, which Miller is usually big explosions and big action.
It sounds cool. I'm gonna get it now.
Yeah. Is this the, maybe I'm confusing things, but is this the project that they had originally?
They were gonna do the photo style.
Yeah, it was all photos done in comic style.
Yeah.
Okay, and I guess they abandoned that.
Fumetti,
yeah,
they kicked the can to Fumetti,
and they got Tommy Lee Edwards, which I think is a wise choice.
Well, yes. Yeah, well, yeah, the art is fantastic. Great. And Mark Miller is on fire lately. He seems like he's like the Steven Spielberg of comics, because he does the summertime events.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, probably not as, I mean, I heard you guys maybe criticizing maybe a certain lack of depth there, but he still puts on a great show. And
still puts out stuff like this occasionally.
Right.
I mean, I have enjoyed. I mean, this and Kick-Ass are like pretty much the polar.
Right.
I've enjoyed Kick-Ass. So
yeah.
I didn't enjoy Fantastic Four that much.
Oh, you're not digging Fantastic Four?
No,
I'm loving
not that
it.
Much.
I'm loving it.
I like the stuff before. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's horrible. It's just I was
well,
like,
who was doing it for? Like Straczynski or something?
McDuffie had a
McDuffie.
Nice
McDuffie was doing it before, and I think it might be some of the. I'm not a big Hitch fan, so
hey, you talked me out of not reading it anymore.
Well, no, I asked you why you were reading it, and you couldn't come up with. You said everything you talked about. You're like, I think it's okay.
Well, the thing about
I don't talk people. I don't like sit, hang down, and talk.
Evangelize,
Warren Barnes,
whatever the hell you want. I don't care.
The thing about Miller in the past is that he's always been very good at the payoff, and you know, I felt that in Ultimates is that he had just great payoffs in that book, and this I don't know. It was just more. Subtle. It was the subtle moments that really drew me into
it. It's his E.T., you know?
yeah. It really does kind of feel like a Spielberg movie. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Well, I'm gonna pick it up. I was sort of... I wasn't going to get it, which is evidenced by the fact that I didn't.
The
way I look at time is non-linear.
He's
telling the
truth. I actually think that you'll... I could see a young Tom Caters in Green Bay, Wisconsin in this
world. Crying. Nah, I was banging chicks, man. No, that's so far from the truth. Tom reading comics not even like from the mid-70s without covers. Like
rolling some 20-sided dice, maybe?
Hey. I've been spotted around 20-sided dice.
Hey, now you strike the bull too close.
There's no photos, but there's rumors.
I was a 35th level ranger by the time I was 12.
Oh, so. No.
All right,
let's all gang up on
Christmas. Yeah. Yeah, what's new?
Oh, it's too easy.
Len, what is your top of the stack?
That was Marvel 1985.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, and I guess just what Miller's been doing lately. I caught up on Kick-Ass just last week. Am I speaking louder than I said I would?
No, you're good.
But so I just finished up Kick-Ass last week. Caught up with it's up to issue 3 now.
It's up to 2, I think.
2?
Yeah. Have you liked it so far?
I have liked it so far.
I've liked the art a lot.
Uh huh.
I'm kind of interested to see where the story, like, breaks.
It's funny to see John Romita Jr. do something like that, because he usually kind of, he usually does more mainstream kind of tamer stuff. I don't think he's drawn this much blood in his life.
Yeah. I'm kind of interested to see where, like, the story is going to, like, where the twist.
Uh-huh.
There's got to be one besides him, like...
Well, he's talked about, the middle of the story was planned even before this little part where he's at right now, where he's kind of alluding to a whole world full of these kind of heroes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what that looks like.
Well, we had talked to Romita Jr. at a Wizard World, like, 3 years ago, and he had talked about doing this with Mark Miller. So, I mean, they've been working on this.
Uh-huh.
They're always talking about it for a long time now.
So. I think, just for the art alone, even if the concept doesn't strike, the art is, it's really
he's
good.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, he's the master storyteller, and now that he's doing New York in such a realistic style.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's from New York, it's really cool to see him. I think it's some of the best work he's ever done.
Has it already been optioned for a movie?
Yes.
Yeah. I think before he wrote it was optioned for a movie. I thought I read somewhere.
Millar can fart on a snare drum and he gets an option for a movie.
He
does it.
Yeah.
He just has to mention it.
This is like, like issue 2.
He's on fire.
Anybody looking forward to War Heroes? I can't wait to check that out.
I am very interested in that.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of times when Millar announces something, he's somebody who, when he's got like an idea for something, I think it is either going to be awesome or it's going to be a colossal failure.
Uh-huh.
Like it's
he goes
like
big.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes big.
Yeah,
fail
big.
Home.
Yeah, exactly.
Swing for the fences.
Yeah. You know, like Kick Ass, and you hear the concept, you can see how it would completely couldn't work.
It's
you
like
know,
this could go off the rails.
It's
really quick.
It's gonna get real bad, real fast.
You know, and I respect that. It's like I'm not liking his Fantastic Four right now, but he is definitely a get off the porch and play kind of guy. He's gonna go out there and play big. So
well, I mean, apparently I'm
a
minority.
Small little Scottish guy. He plays big.
Plays so big.
Yeah, I definitely. It seems like I'm in the minority for Fantastic Four. I Steve McNiven does the art, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling.
I think
it.
Hitch does.
Oh,
right.
I'm
Hitch.
Sorry.
All right, Hitch. Cause
Civil War.
Yeah, right.
McNiven,
yeah.
Sorry.
Whoever does those. The other beautiful photorealistic kind of art, tight ass art style. I don't know. I think some of that art kind of creeps into the. To the uncanny valley. I don't know. That's why I kind of like John Romita Jr. a little better because it kind of feels stiff. It doesn't move as much. I don't know.
Because he's awesome.
I like the uncanny valley thing does come up in the Fantastic Four for me. Because occasionally, the thing that bothered me a little bit with the art and that was that characters seem to like. Sometimes Reed Richards looked old, and then sometimes he looked like Ultimate Reed Richards, and then sometimes he looked like. Somebody else.
Well, I think it literally was like all the Marvel superheroes on one page, and then you turn the page, and they're all laying down.
What happened in between?
but I tell you what, if the Fantastic Four movie were like half this good,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't be the shitty franchise it is.
Yeah,
right
well,
now.
Miller's Ultimate Fantastic Four, I loved.
I did like.
Oh
it.
Yeah,
I,
that was great.
I it's probably my favorite part of.
It's always context. It's always like. If you were reading it before and you were enjoying it, and then someone else takes it over, then and they kind of twist it in a different way, then you'll be like, "Oh, I don't quite like this as much." If you weren't reading it before and you're picking it up for that, you might pick it up and be like, "Oh, you know."
FF is not an easy book to write. It sounds like it would be, but it's just it's got to be a hard book to write.
It's got to be hard to figure out things for them. How to have all of them be in a story anymore? Because you have to have all of them sort of in the story. It's not like
Fantastic Four.
It's not like the Avengers or the Justice League where you can pick,
there's
two members and just be like, I'm gonna have these two in this. You kind of have to have.
You know, honestly, mainstream FF, the mainline series, hasn't been interesting to me since Byrne worked on it. I haven't really read it religiously.
Was that like Galactus and stuff?
Yeah, I mean we're going back. This is like Marvel 1985 shit. You know?
This is 85 stuff.
This is back when Sue had a mullet. I mean, this is
that was hot.
That sounds
hot. H A W T
Hey, yeah, well, yeah, just after, I guess it would have been, because right after Secret Wars, that's when She-Hulk replaced Ben Grimm in the series. Well,
that's always when a writer took over that book and didn't know what to do. You replace one of the members.
The best one.
Perhaps you get pregnant. Or,
yeah, yeah. What's
the dog's gone crazy.
It's the Dark Tower attack dog. Get him, Coco!
Gentle. Don't tell. Actually, don't tell the pit bull that.
That Coco would waddle up to someone before they would before she would bite her.
If it was a drumstick, maybe it would. Be a chocolate pie.
Attack that burrito.
Attack that.
Oh, all right. Well, is that going to take care of our top of the stack for the week?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we got a new little segment here. We're gonna try and every other episode we're gonna call a creator and talk about what they are up to.
We like to harass people in person and over the phone.
We're gonna interrupt people's Friday.
We're
dinners.
Gonna have a segment where we IM people. We have dramatic greetings of the IMs.
Smiley face.
Smiley face.
So good at reenactments of IMs.
Emoticons.
Well, this week we're going to call
wink.
Another one of my favorite writers in the past couple years, a breakout series called The Damned, which we've talked about quite a bit.
Also making a movie out of it.
Another one of those movie moguls. So tell you what, let's give Mr. Cullen Bunn a call.
Look at all those movie stars, they're all so beautiful and clean. When the house meets up the floors, they get the space.
Cullen, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right. Well, first of all, congratulations on not just the second series of The Damned, which is on shelves right now, but on your big blockbuster movie deal.
Oh, thank you.
You got a blockbuster membership? Congratulations, Cullen.
Thank you.
I bumped into Brian Hurt at actually the last couple conventions.
You didn't bump into him. You hunted him down, probably. Yeah. And there's no way it was random.
I did hunt him down at the old Oni booth there.
Funny to run into you in your hotel room.
I haven't heard that before.
But Brian seems, obviously very excited about the movie news. But I'll go ahead and just ask you, how did that all come about, and where's the progress on the movie at this point?
Oni actually took care of all that for us. So they had the connections and worked that side of it with DreamWorks. So, Brian and I actually didn't even, we were brought in, we kind of had hints of it, we thought, but we were brought in when it was pretty close to a done deal. They didn't want to tell us about it too soon, because they didn't want to get our hopes up for it, in case it fell through.
Sure. Well, that's kind of nice to walk in and say, hey, okay, yeah, we got a movie deal all hammered out for you, congratulations.
Well, yeah, I knew something was going on, because the day they told me, I was at work. And I was in a meeting, and my cell phone kept, buzzing, and I kept seeing Brian's name come up, and he never calls me that many times in a row. So I was like, oh, this something's going on. So I had to excuse myself from the room and go take the call, and then had to sit back down and try to play it cool in the meeting.
Nice. How did you do that? How did you play cool? Did you lean back? Did you put your feet up on the table?
No. Right now, it's actually being scripted, so that's a good thing that it's moving forward with being scripted by David DiGilio.
Very. Has he worked on any other movie scripts that we'd be familiar with?
He did Eight Below.
Paul Walker movie.
With that movie or not?
Was that some sort of movie involving cold?
I'm sorry?
Was that involving cold weather or being frozen?
It was involving cold weather and dogs.
Oh, okay, I get it. Oh, it's a dog race movie.
Paul Walker.
Right.
Okay.
It's adorable.
I'm an Idita fan.
Now, do you know how much the script is going to be? Is it going to follow the first trade of The Damned fairly closely? Or are they taking the general concept? Do you have any idea how much license they're going to have with the script at this point?
I do not know yet. It sounds like obviously when it gets to this sort of thing, they're going to he's going to have to take take some, you know, it's going to differ from the comic to some degree, but I don't know how much it's going to. They're just, you know, there's certain things that Brian and I have kind of have planned for the Damned that at some point it's going to have to depart from what we have planned because no one else knows what that is yet.
Sure. Well, I'm sure this all started before the current three-issue miniseries called Prodigal Sons came out, and that deals with a lot of great backstory with Eddie and a brother that we didn't know that he had. And you know, I definitely want to talk about the new series that's out. It's the second issue shipped a couple weeks ago, and it'll get ready to wrap up here in I assume a couple weeks. Tell us about getting back together with Brian and doing Prodigal Sons.
Well, Prodigal Sons actually, you know, it, to me, has been a lot. I don't know. I feel like it's been a lot more fun. I mean, just reading it, I'm sure you've seen it's kind of a different take on the story. The first story was more of a noir mystery, and this one is more a pulp adventure type story
with a twist.
With maybe a little bit of Weekend at Bernie's thrown in.
Absolutely.
Awesome. There's so much Andrew McCarthy all over that issue.
Well, when Brian and I first sat down to talk about it, I said, okay, how about this? Weekend at Bernie's. And he wasn't sure if I was serious or if I was.
You seriously pitched it to him as Weekend at Bernie's?
Yeah, that was when we first sat down to talk about it, I said, how about something a little like Weekend at Bernie's? We wanted to start moving towards answering at least some of the questions that some of the readers had, and we also wanted to delve into Eddie's past a little bit, and we were both really excited to introduce the Morgan character.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He was actually planned for the original series, but we realized we kind of planned everything for the original series. We had to start toning it down a little bit.
Sure, it's you know, I guess that's probably a natural thing to do whenever you have, you know, the genesis of an idea is that you want to get everything in there, and you know, luckily the Damned was enough of a success that you're able to go back. I think George Lucas talks about that with Star Wars, that he had planned like that entire the entire trilogy.
You don't
to be
have
one
a
movie.
Jar Jar Binks you're going to introduce though.
Hopefully not, but you never know. I mean,
it's their lovable nephew who shows up.
God,
and, like,
yeah. Please no.
Eddie's bratty lovable nephew.
Well, one of the things I love about Prodigal Son so far is that you guys have a great plot device with Eddie, in that when he is dead, his soul is off doing other things in the netherworld. And so you have really two stories going on. You have what's going on back in the, you know, the real world where his body is well, he's dead, and what's going on there. And then you have this whole other story where, I don't want to ruin it for people, where Eddie is doing something in basically hell and is on his own mission. And so it's really nice to have two developing stories at the same time. One is almost comedic, and then one is very, very scary and supernatural.
Right. Yeah. That's I think what probably the most fun about writing this story is. I get to flex all those muscles instead of just, you know, one kind of story. I get the action and we get some comedy in there, and then we still get the creep factor a little bit with the purgatory scenes. And the purgatory scenes are really setting up to. Hopefully within this, you know, this three-issue series, and then there is a second three-issue series that will follow that, is really going to set up where Brian and I have the story going.
Nice. Well, yeah, you definitely feel like the purgatory story is really the meat of what's going on. That's gonna have longer reaching effect where what's happening with Eddie's brother.
I like the brother stuff. The brother's my favorite character now.
Oh, he's awesome. It's great, but that's the fun kind of, you know, well, it's the Weekend at Bernie's storyline.
Right, it is. And you know, that's really not fair for me to call it that, because right now there's obviously a lot going on in the purgatory stuff. Stuff with Morgan actually will start tying into that as well. And Morgan may be, well, Eddie's my favorite character probably, but Morgan is Morgan's a close second, because he's one of the, in this world, and people have always said, you know, people have said frequently, you know, there aren't any good guys in this story.
Mm-hmm.
And Morgan is really so far the only real good guy that we've had.
Real okay, you consider him a good guy?
I consider Morgan a good guy more than Morgan is. You know, he's trying to do right, but the thing with Morgan is, in the end, he's gonna do whatever it takes to help his brother, whether he likes his brother or not. He's going to. Eddie kind of uses that against him in many ways.
He's like a black sheep of even a black sheep, which makes him normal,
exactly.
Which makes him like more like us. You know, like he's
right. He may not be a hero, you know, a white hat wearing hero, but he's the closest thing we've got right now
to
a
the moral compass pointing in the right direction.
Right.
Sure. You know, back to the movie a little bit, and we had actually talked previously about, or Sal and I, who's not here tonight, about casting the damned. Do you have any wishes or desires?
I have lots. It's probably too soon for me to mention any of them.
Okay, but you do have people in mind.
Yeah, Brian and I have argued late into the night about who we think should be cast in the movie, and I want to
throw Adrian Brody out as Eddie.
Shia LaBeouf.
You know, he was actually one of the first that I said as well for Eddie was Adrian Brody.
Nice. Our 15-year-old Hank here shouts out Shia LaBeouf. He's in everything.
Yeah, he is in everything.
He doesn't have time. Well, that's well.
He wouldn't be bad either, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
I think they should just cast me and get done with it.
There you go.
I just don't know if I want my pretty boy looks ruined by all the scars.
Yeah, you know they would have to kind of dress you down in the movie, Colin.
A little bit.
Well, you know, I'm actually you made a cameo in Queen and Country, which kind of makes me hate you. So, you know,
give it up, Chris.
Sick. The fun thing about that bit with Queen and Country was Chris was at one of the conventions where Chris was had copies of those pages without any lettering on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I took those and put Post-its all over it, re-scripting that character as a completely badass me.
Nice.
And I told him to send it to Greg Rucka, but I don't think he ever did it. So.
Yeah, probably not. But no, it was cool. And Chris showed me those pages before they came out, and it was like, yep, that's Colin.
Yeah.
Well, hey, besides The Damned, I know that you have some other stuff that that you've been hinting at that you're working on for a while. Are you able to talk about any of that yet?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, well, like I said, there's a second series of The Damned coming out called Daughter's Dance,
mm-hmm.
which will follow, the third series, which will follow Prodigal Sons. Besides that, I've got... It's not until next year that it'll be released, but there's a graphic novel coming out with Oni that is unrelated to The Damned, but sort of a full-blown horror story that'll be coming out next year.
Nice.
And then I've got a couple of other things that I would probably be killed if I mentioned at this point.
All right, we'll respect that. It's,
you have to be the first to know, of course.
Oh, I appreciate it. On the Damned, the two three issue series, are those going to be hopefully collected together as one trade?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the plan. Is that once both of those series have come out, they will be collected as the second trade paperback.
Nice. You know, the first Damned collection that came out, which was fantastic. I had gotten in single issues, but the first collection that came out, a little undersized of the regular comic format. Are you guys going to stay with that formatting for the series?
Yeah, it'll probably be in that format.
Yeah, it's not quite a pocketbook, but it's just a little undersized, right?
Yeah, it's not pocketbook. It's a little bigger than that. And that was Brian's doing. He really lobbied for that, but I think, you know, when it came out, I really liked the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the trade paperback really ended up being a really good looking book, and I'm not all into paper and everything, but the paper that it's printed on, it really made the colors, or the gray tones really, rich, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's weird. An artist actually lobbying to have a smaller size book put out. Usually they want the big oversized.
Yeah. Well, now, don't get me wrong. Once we've told the whole story, then we'll go for the oversized omnibus.
Ah.
You're not getting any more money out of me. I already spent it on the singles.
All right, well, Cullen, it is always a pleasure talking with you, and we'll definitely check in again when the second series hits. Do you have a release date for that yet?
I'm not exactly sure when that's going. I don't think we have a firm release date on it, so I don't want to say anything. It'll be a few months after the last issue of this series.
Okay, so coming out this year, though.
Yes.
Okay, outstanding. Well, good sir, thank you so much, and we will catch up with you again soon.
I really appreciate it, guys.
All right, always calling. Talk to you later.
Bye. Take care.
All right, and a big thanks to Cullen Bunn. We didn't really break down what The Damned is about, but if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you should already know. And if you don't, just take my word for it. Go out, pick out that first trade of The Damned. It is good.
Yeah.
It's a, how did I describe it early on? It's like a great James Cagney movie with demons. It is really a fun series.
Since we have a few minutes, what's your guys' favorite Bigfoot story?
Right now?
That someone's told you, or you've ever seen on, if you've seen a Bigfoot movie, it could be Harry and the Hendersons.
Well, I'm from Southern Illinois, so we don't have Bigfoot, we have the Big Muddy Monster.
It's Bigfoot. Okay. Len, it's you
the,
go.
It's let's the drunk skip,
let's skip Grandpa over here. With mud
back in my day, the Big Muddy Monster is what prowled our countryside.
About 5-6 years ago, maybe longer than that. I have no judgment of time. A couple of pals of mine, though, they did a Bigfoot story for Image. It was called Shadows was the name of the series. Very short-lived but good series about these paranormal investigators, and they end up tracking down Bigfoot. And one of the Bigfoots is a female, so she has these big Bigfoot breasts.
Hot.
I know.
Hot, yeah.
So that's pretty shocking.
Shocking Bigfoot bosom.
Yeah.
I like that. It's good. I like that. Hank, favorite Bigfoot story? Harry and the Hendersons?
Sure, whatever that
you
is.
Like that one?
it's a generation gap.
Kids these days don't know about Bigfoot? Well, you don't know any? You've
Mike?
Never seen anything about Bigfoot?
Big what?
Bigfoot.
Oh.
History Channel? You've never seen any shows about Bigfoot?
It was right after the Ben Franklin documentary.
Jesus Christ,
the Bigfoot,
what are they
Life
teaching
of Bigfoot?
You kids these days? You probably think Pokemon characters are like Bigfoot, right?
Oh, I thought that's what you were talking. I didn't have that card yet.
Bigfoot's not like Pikachu, Hank. All right, he's a real urban myth. Oh, see, this wasn't.
That's what Tom was.
That was what inspired this conversation. But while Proof is good, is that your favorite Bigfoot story?
Right now, yeah, I love Proof.
Okay.
Proof by Image Comics.
Yeah, well, let me tell you mine.
This is
going to
be good.
No, it's not about Proof. No, but I haven't. Actually, Proof inspired me to talk about this because I really like the 8th issue. But my favorite Bigfoot story I ever heard is when I was in high school. I used to like to listen to Art Bell really late at night. And because, you know, people would tell crazy stories. And there's this guy who claimed that he shot a Bigfoot when he was a rancher and buried it. And then Bigfeet followed him around the country. And you could hear them, like, howling at night. And that always... Even though bullshit, I mean, ridiculous.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Yeah, okay.
You don't know that.
Long haul trucker.
Yeah, exactly. It was probably a long haul trucker.
Long haul trucker.
One time I hit a Bigfoot with a truck.
Speed and mescaline driving across Idaho with Bigfoot.
Yeah, ether. I always liked the image of like Bigfoot have nothing better to do than follow this guy. This guy shot one of us. Now we're going to spend the next 20 years. As if they don't have their own things going on. If they're smart enough to follow them, they're probably smart enough to have like other shit to do with their lives.
Well, hey, talking about being like secluded out in the wilderness and it totally untouched.
Oh, those Amazons, yeah. Did you see?
That blew my mind.
On CNN, they had this big thing about on BBC News that there's this group. It's like sort of publicity for these groups and. Brazil and Peru,
uncontacted tribes.
Yeah, well, there's this group that protects these people from
unwanted contact, okay. And there had been a lot of discussion about whether or not they existed, and they had this big photo spread of them flying over these people who have never
pretty close
been touched by, like, really, yeah, close. Really close, and it's really weird to look at. They're like shooting arrows into the sky,
yeah,
at this airplane.
Well,
yeah.
I read the and this was at BBC.com, yeah, or whatever, yeah, it was, yeah, and it showed the beginning photos where they just kind of went over the, you know, thatch covered little village, like five or six huts. And the people were there, and then they like come back later, and like all of the men in the tribe had painted themselves red.
So spears at it.
Yeah, they were shooting arrows at the plane.
Yeah, that's crazy to think of, like, in a world where I can get like a Google map of my street and see what my street looks like. There's people who have never had contact with really like the outside world.
I'm like thinking underneath, like,
yeah,
the MySpace
pages,
like the thatch covered huts had like you know wine fridges.
There's they're not on Facebook. You can't talk to them.
You can't even if you went to high school with them. You
no
can't track
cell
them
phone
down.
Reception in the middle of the jungle. I just think that blows me away to think about
totally
like,
untouched
imagine,
by civilization.
In a world where you know, it you have works. iPhones and stuff like that, and then there's people who have none of that and don't know it exists at all.
And seem
no
to be
content.
Doing okay.
Well, I mean, they didn't have, like, stretch Hummers or anything. Like, so that's my measure.
Have
success.
You ever seen The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Yes, I have.
Kind of it was in Coke Africa.
Bottle. Yeah,
the
right.
Coke bottle, how it totally changes their civilization. Yeah, kind of along those lines. But, yeah, I wonder if they've seen a Bigfoot.
I doubt it. It's probably called something different in South America.
Grande. Pace.
What?
I don't think they speak Portuguese in these these untouched tribes.
That's so. An untapped demographic for you.
I'm
going to
go down there and meet them.
Comic podcasting.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are probably loyal. They probably only listen to us.
The number one podcast in uncontacted.
Do you think they get wireless in the middle of the
bridge? Drop some iPods.
Satellite phones. Yeah, there you go.
Around Comics, the first comics podcast to go to the middle of the Amazon to get five listeners.
Do a live show from
there. What is Batman?
Tom would come back painted red with a bow and arrow.
I go home that
way. I was going to say.
Been changed!
Again.
I get ready to fight when I see a plane or a ghetto bird. Well, or a helicopter. People don't know what a ghetto bird is.
A ghetto bird.
Yeah. Not everyone's familiar with the work of Ice Cube.
Before we wrap up here and let Hank loose here for the evening, he's got
curfew.
He's got, well, no, you got catting around to do. You're out.
Whoa!
See that smile? He's
whatever,
like, yeah,
is he
going
to go to the carnival to go catting around?
It's Mayfest here in Lincoln Square.
It's catting around. My grandfather would think that's out of date. I was thinking of getting a parasol and meeting with my favorite lady for some catting around. Maybe some saltwater taffy and.
Sal's going to be so proud of you for beating up on me tonight. He's going, way to go, Tom.
It's so
I know.
Catting around. Jesus. Watch out.
Hank knew what I was talking about.
You got a real rube over
here. You know,
I don't have a cat. I don't know.
No, I'm good.
Catting around.
Well, before we let Hank go tonight, I wanted to have him talk a little bit about, you know, Hank is our great hope for the next generation, I guess. So it's a lot of responsibility.
Friends,
though, really. It's a lot of responsibility, Hank. You know,
Norton.
most of the people that we have on the show or listen to the show are at least in their mid to late 20s,
old
and
sad
probably
white
much
guys. Mostly sad white men.
Yes, yes, there's
slightly overweight.
And you know,
sometimes
just
single.
Thinking about you know, looking at comics through the rose colored glasses of nostalgia. But you are 17 years old and a hardcore comic book fan.
Yeah,
but,
the hardest.
I mean, we all have memories of what that was like, you know, for us in high school and growing up. But you know, what's it like for you?
I know
what
we're getting to, Hank. Hank, how do you feel about being single for a very long time?
Some good things about me.
Yeah.
The freedom.
A lot of alone
freedom.
Time. You always have plenty
don't
of time.
Don't touch my back issues.
You always have plenty of time to read your comic books without pesky going out to dinner with friends or girlfriends.
Get used to
the
it.
Space that I would use for a girlfriend in my bed. I just put comic books and more long boxes.
Yeah, that's space. That's one.
You're well on your way, young man. You're well on your way
to a certain.
My wife still won't touch my single issue comic books because I
hit her when she does it.
Yeah, no, it's like she like.
I don't want to know where this is going.
She like tried to read one of my comics and she,
you ring it out of order.
No, I was just like, you can't hold it like that. You know?
Jesus Christ. Yeah. What people wonder why new people don't pick up comics. Someone you love and trust picks up a comic the wrong way. You're holding it wrong.
But there's such a process.
The resale value has dropped dramatically. It's not like she's picking up Action Comics number one and like fold it in half and put it in her back pocket.
Oh, God.
It's probably like Daredevil.
I'm like breaking out in a cold sweat. It's probably a Daredevil. About it.
It's probably a Daredevil from 2 weeks ago that she like bent one of the... And you can't bend the covers like that.
No.
I need a new one.
Here, I let my girlfriend do whatever she wants to my comics.
Yeah, but you buy like old books.
Yeah, they're already waterlogged. Because I let her do whatever she wants. She want, doesn't touch them or look at them.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things. Maybe a little bit different with Hank being a comic fan. Now, we came up when comics were very much looked at as collectibles. And I guess they still are. And the whole boards and bags thing of...
I burnt down on that totally. I see you got your stack is all bagged and boarded. I one day just that fuse popped in my head, and now they're all just in piles all over my room.
Well, Norton is walking around here, and I don't think he keeps any of his comics. And
he burnt... Norton only owns one comic at a time. As soon as he finishes it, he sits back and burns it. And gets the next.
There's an old Power Man comic in my car right now. That's all
I'm done with this. Didn't need to do that. I'm done. And
I have
no
the memories. Ninja, come chew on this. Daddy's got a new toy
come
for
on,
you.
Burn this up.
But Hank, I mean, do you look at comics that way as like, you know, future investments or how do you treat your comics?
Well, when I was a wee lad, last year, yeah, still, I used to live down the street from a comic shop and like baseball card store, and this was 95, 96.
Was it called the Gold Mine? Both of those hobbies.
But
hot.
My older brothers, one of them was 13 at the time, was very big into, you know, it was the comic boom. He was the collector. You know, he's got all the old Spawn and stuff, and he's got all that. And
he's rich now, right?
Yes. He sold one Spawn comic.
Wealthy? Yes.
But I always viewed it as that until I started I've only been reading comics hardcore, as Chris says, for about 2 years now.
What's that mean?
You don't want to know. Yeah. And but before that,
he buys more comics than I do.
Look at this thing.
Yeah.
Look at
this
thing.
Week's comics, man.
Comics ain't bad. You're a young man, then. That's fine. Chris is old.
I steal them.
I steal them from stores because I'm young.
Like Dark Tower. Mark looks the other way.
I can run faster than them.
Yeah.
But I never got into the comics because I just thought the only comics that I knew were, you know, my brother's comics who had just bought them for like resale, and I just thought I'm not going to do that, you know. And but then I got into comics. I think I mentioned this last time I was on with Civil War.
Mhm.
So I got in and I was
God, you're new.
Civil War brought you in. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Civil War kind of feels like last week's laundry.
Are you jaded yet? Have you become jaded?
Very, very much so.
It's faster. It takes quicker. It's
it is.
Time
it is a faster world, isn't it?
But some of my friends that like kind of read comics, they're not like weekly shoppers, but like once every while. But they actually collect, and I don't know. I'm not really into that, but I'm surprised that my friends do. But
do you want me to talk to them?
Please
do.
Please do.
Come to your high
please
school?
Do. Talk them out of
do you want me to
reading
come to your
Fantastic
high school?
Four.
I'll come to your high school and give a talk.
But yeah, I just got into it because of the great stories and I'm not really into the collecting thing.
Yeah. What are your favorite books? What do you enjoy out there?
I'm really liking Daredevil. I'm going to flip through the stack here.
Oh,
Astonishing
God.
X-Men. Astonishing X-Men is... Mm-hmm.
Hank,
I'm
you
really
picked your favorite book. These are all second rates. Don't
All-Star
sully
Superman.
Your pick.
All-Star Superman is probably the best comic out right now.
Yeah, that is good.
And a new one came out this week, didn't it?
Yeah.
I only had enough time to sit on the toilet and read 1985, so I'll go back and
eat
read...
more.
I know, right?
I'll say this week's wasn't... Most of the All-Star Supermans have at least one moment where I'm like...
Oh, that's really touching. But this one didn't have quite
that touching moment.
But
spoilers!
So
spoilers about my feelings.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Spoilers about how Tom's feelings about things.
Well, the last one was so awesome. The little twisty
that
twist
was
ending.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Well, the whole thing of like a world where Superman actually does cure cancer. You know, it's like, oh, of course Superman would figure out how to fix everything. Spoilers.
I'm really big into crime movies and crime comics. So I'm a big fan of Brubaker.
Are you in a gang?
Steals comics with a gang.
Are you people or folks?
Do you know that?
Oh,
well, keep your eye on Hank because he's an aspiring filmmaker, and
you had to tell them
you are an aspiring filmmaker, and big things in this young man's future.
He's so young though. Next week, he could want to be an astronaut.
I want to be a dinosaur.
Or a lion tamer.
I want to be
a dinosaur warrior. Oh, Hank. So young.
I got 401ks for the dinosaur warrior.
Yeah.
Well, nice. I tell you let's wrap this puppy up for another week. We're gonna have Len back next week. So
you don't have to come back. You'll still be here.
Yeah.
This is trickery.
This is the time.
Where am I going?
You leave.
You're going to eat sandwiches with Norton. I think isn't that what he was yelling at you for?
You guys are gonna go get sandwiches.
Yeah, you can't have them.
I know. I'm not allowed to. Yeah.
I want to remind folks that there's a couple other places that you can hear Tom and I ramble on and on and on about comic books.
I don't ramble. I'm fucking
you're in and out.
Shit,
yeah, you're in and out. You can check Tom. Is it every day still? I'm catching up.
No, it's whenever.
Okay.
Whenever I do, it's like 3 times a week. It could be 3 times on Monday, or it could be once on Monday, once on Tuesday, once on Wednesday.
There you go.
Tom versus the JLA. I read old JLA issues and I make fun of them.
And
it's kind of cruel.
And it's a lot of fun. for me,
it's easy.
For me, who was never going to have the time to go back and read all of the Silver Age JLA.
I'm not making
Tom,
fun of them.
Tom,
I'm enjoying
old
comic books.
Dude, you couldn't do that many if you didn't. Like,
Hank,
you would have burned out so fast if you didn't enjoy
them. Old comics for Hank are like stuff that came out 3 years ago. Oh, gross. I hate this.
So, Tom versus the JLA, check that out on iTunes, or is there any other good way to go?
No, that's the best
That's
way.
The best iTunes?
You can Google Tom versus the JLA, and it'll take you to
the Wibson page?
Yeah, which is nothing.
There you go.
I don't even have a logo on iTunes.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the show.
That is your logo.
20,000 listeners.
That is your logo. Is that it?
Yeah,
I've written
that. I sit in with Vince B, David Price, and Woody every week on 11 o'clock comics for all of the old bullpen bulletins fans out there. It's still on that feed, or you can look up 11 o'clock comics on iTunes. It's 1 hour a week of just four guys talking about comics. And I want to thank everyone that has been giving us iTunes reviews of late. Thanks to Comic Book Junkie, Puppet Disaster, Dwebs 222, Equinox, Big Dumb Donkey Girl, that's interesting, Eric Evil, Kubiak, WU, Radio God, Manos 210, and Nagazi. Thank you so much, guys. Those iTunes reviews really do help us. They help the visibility of the show. So if you haven't done one yet, that is my shameless plea for you to go and do one. So thank you in advance. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Hank, Tom, Len, and Tom and Len will be back next week with another surprise guest. Thanks to Mark and everyone here at Dark Tower. As always, everyone have a fantastic week. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and
around. Come on.
Oh, that was lonely.
Take two.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.